This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We react to the big news about Matt Gaetz. Natalie Winters is going to join us to also react to that news. Hollywood stars are actually leaving America. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's talk about the Gaetz thing. And the Gaetz thing being the fact that Matt Gaetz came out earlier today and made an announcement that he's withdrawing his name from being AG. Here's actually specifically what he said. I had excellent meetings with the senators yesterday. We'll get to that in a moment. I appreciate their thoughtful feedback and the incredible support of many. While the momentum was strong, it's clear my confirmation was unfairly becoming a distraction to the critical work of Trump Vance. No time to waste, yada, yada, yada. I'm withdrawing my name, blah, 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 blah. You got it all. He bounced out. Okay, so first, let's do this. Remember the conversation we've had many times before about how we have 1,000 battles to fight. Saving a country and losing a country is a process, not an event. A process, not an event. We had a huge election win. It's wonderful. I'm still so happy. I'm assuming you're still so happy about it. And that's good. Feel good. But it was a major battle, but it was one battle. There are 1,000 more to come. This was one of those battles. Donald Trump's preference for Attorney General was Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz spent the day yesterday bouncing around the halls of the Senate. And look, I'm sure you already figured this out, but here's how this works. You go door to door. There are 100 senators. You're probably not going to bother meeting with the Democrats. So you're going to have about 53 doors you need to knock on, give or take, depending on who's in town. You go knock on the Republican senators' doors. They would, of course, have meetings set up ahead of time. They're not actually knocking on doors. And you go sit down and you simply ask, are you a yes or a no? Are you a maybe? Can I convince you? Do we need to go do lunch? And what you're doing is you're simply counting votes. They spent the day yesterday on Capitol Hill counting votes. Are we going to do this or not? And it's obvious from Gaetz' statement and from the timing of all this, they walked off of Capitol Hill yesterday, and Matt Gaetz did not have the votes. I was told you that he was going to be a coin flip. I assume most of the others will be okay, but I knew Matt Gaetz was going to be a coin flip. Matt Gaetz did not have the votes. That's obviously what happened here. Now, there are details we don't know and probably won't ever know, but the bottom line is Matt Gaetz did not have the votes. And why didn't he have the votes? Well, that's going to lead us to a little bit of a larger conversation we're going to have. Matt Gaetz didn't have the votes because of the United States Senate. But the Republicans control the United States Senate. I don't understand. Well, that is the point. You see, the primary in your red state. I'm not even talking about the Lisa Murkowskis and the Susan Collins of the world. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about our red state senator problem, because we have a big one. We have states that are blood red. They could elect and will elect any Republican who wins the primary. And our reddest states send consistently our worst senators to the United States Senate. No excuse for it. It's on me. It's on you. If you reside in these red states, I do. I reside in Texas. To have John Cornyn be a United States senator from Texas is unacceptable. I need to do better. I need to do more. Unacceptable. As soon as we get as invested and involved in our primary process as we do when Donald Trump is on the ballot for president, then these things will stop happening. Now, let's talk about how intelligence agencies not just work today, but how evil communist agencies work, how they've always really worked. You see, the communist knows how to use your values against you. this is a conversation we've had many times, but because his only value is the revolution, he doesn't have anything else. All he cares about is the revolution. Burn everything down, torch the country. For him, that is the greater good. I know it's sick, but for him, that's all that matters. He has no other value system beyond that. It gives him the freedom you don't have. It gives him the freedom to take your values and use them against you. And they do this with dirty stuff all the time, and they always have. Did you know, if you watch this show for any length of time, you do know this, but did you know the Stasi, the secret police in the East Germany, that horrible communist country? Did you know that they used to plant pornography on people? They would plant it. The agency itself, they would go out, they'd put it in your mailbox, put it in your desk, break into your home, put it by your bed. Why? Why would you? Why? I remember the first time I read something like that, I thought, that's so weird. Why? That's just odd. But it's not when you actually think about it, because what happens when your wife goes and gets the mail? She finds that smut in there. She comes storming into the house. Now there are cracks in your home. Now you're having a big argument. Hey, I saw what you were looking at. What did you do? There are cracks in your home. It appeals to her emotions. It attacks her emotions. And it breaks things up. Dirty things like that appeal to your emotions. They go after your emotions, my emotions. As soon as you hear underage this or paid her for that, immediately we're all, everybody, it's human nature, we're all, ooh, that's gross. Ew, I hope that's not true. Oh, gross. And you see that value system of yours, which is good. I'm not criticizing your value system. That value system of yours is used against you by evil communist agencies all the time. Do you remember? We've talked about this on the show before. Do you remember Cheryl Atkinson? She's still around, so I hope you do remember her. A wonderful journalist. And what happened was she was with, I believe, CBS at the time, and she was going after Barack Obama. This is when Barack Obama was president. She was one of the few journalists in the country who was willing to really expose the evil things Barack Obama was doing. And of course, because Barack Obama is an evil, demonic communist, he sent the government after Cheryl Atkinson. And do you remember what Cheryl Atkinson testified the FBI tried to do? Remember this?
It sucks being set up by the government and surveilled by the government. And sometimes it takes far too long to be able to clear those matters up.
One little reported facet of my case is one of the federal agents involved in one of the operations against me said that they intended to plant child porn in my husband's computer. This is the FBI. There's been a case that's currently in litigation, unrelated, in which an FBI agent has testified that they did that. They have done that. It was not accomplished in my case. I guess the curtain was drawn on that facet of the operation prior to them doing it. But imagine how you ever get out of that. They knew we had a young daughter at home and had allegedly conspired to do that.
This is not some internet wingnut. That's Cheryl Atkinson, and as she said, it's part of the public record now. These agencies, why would you plant child porn on somebody's computer? Why would you do such a thing? Because they understand the second I say the words, child porn, what do you do? Same thing I do. Oh, gosh, gross. Ah. It creates this emotion inside of you. And that's why they do it. Because they know if they can do that, and obviously this is something they do, these things happen in our country, because it appeals to your emotions, they can use it to get you to go along with whatever they want. And they can use it and do use it and have used it many times to stop people who may threaten them. So if you have an attorney general and you're worried that he may clean house, you're worried that he may expose some level of corruption either when he's in Congress or as attorney general, well, you simply open an investigation. Grab a flimsy witness here, a flimsy witness there. It doesn't matter that they'll be discredited. It doesn't matter what is said. The bottom line is the second you start an investigation, an underage girl paying women immediately, people who don't think, they start to cringe, they pull back, and you've applied that stain to the person you're trying to destroy. And this is not something that happens in East Germany. East Germany's gone. This is something that happens now in the United States of America. Your intelligence agencies, and that is what the FBI is now, but all of them, the intelligence agencies of this country, use these things with regularity to destroy the reputations of anybody who may threaten them in the end. And of course, they do it because, well, look what happened today. They do it because it works. Now, this goes to a talk we've had before. How do you defeat that? How can you fight back against something like that? Well, you stop giving these agencies legitimacy. You see, the problem in the United States Senate, why Matt Gaetz wasn't going to get through the United States Senate, is the United States Senate is still full of low-T GOP losers who see FBI and they think, well, there's an FBI investigation. Clearly, it's very, very important. Instead of looking like at the FBI like the Cheka, which is what it actually is, they still look at it like the great men and women of the FBI. And as long as you look at them like that, you have no chance. They will take the trust you give them, they will take the legitimacy you give them, and they will form a weapon out of it, and they will attack you with it, and they will succeed, just like they did now. We're going to get an AG. I bet you it'll be a good one, too. So don't sit and cry tonight. We lost the battle. It's okay. We'll fight more. We'll win more. We'll lose more. But that's what happened here. And as long as you give these agencies legitimacy, they will keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And be careful, because maybe right now you're sitting there saying, and I would understand this, but Jesse, I don't like Matt Gaetz. I think he's obnoxious. I think he's a jerk. I don't care for Matt Gaetz. I don't want to hang out with him at all. It's not about Matt Gaetz. It's about something so much bigger than Matt Gaetz, because today it was Matt Gaetz. Tomorrow, maybe they're putting something on your computer. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an incredible show. We'll talk to Natalie Winters about what happened today, what she thinks about it. Before we do that, I have some incredible news. I've been telling you about Beam, Dream Powder from Beam, the natural hot cocoa that I drink that puts me to sleep, and then I wake up and I feel good. So you know about Beam already. And what have I told you? What's my flavor? Chocolate cinnamon. I think it's called cinnamon cocoa, but it's amazing. It's delicious. It's just a cup of hot chocolate. Beam just sent me some new flavors, and oh, they have brownie batter. They have, white chocolate peppermint. Oh, my gosh. Just trust me, going to sleep has never tasted so good. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go enjoy. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, as I said in the open, we lost this battle, and it sucks. The Gaetz nomination gone. I think we're going to get something great anyway, but it sucks to lose battles that we should win. Why did we lose it? Let's talk to Natalie Winters about that and other things. Joining me now, co-host of The War Room, one of the great investigative reporters out there on our side, Natalie Winters. All right, Natalie, I was pulling hard for Gaetz to get in there and shake some things up. Didn't work out. It's not my first loss in politics. I'll be fine, but it sucks.
Of course it does. Gates is someone who has gone up against the deep state and frankly won, right? He really, I think, rose to fame with the first impeachment. He stared down all of those democracy-loving crisis actors and just totally obliterated them. But I think unlike the Democrats, we are so blessed to have a very deep bench of people who understand not just how the DOJ has been weaponized against the American people, in some cases firsthand, but more importantly, how to dismantle it. I think there are wonderful people like Jeff Clark, Mark Paoletta, even Andrew Bailey, who I think embody that same spirit. But make no mistake, I think the biggest lesson to take away from Gates withdrawing his nomination is that, you know, the so-called resistance that we're up against is not something that is just confined to the left side of the political aisle. I think the establishment wing of the Republican Party makes up, if not more so, I think at least as much of a significant threat to the MAGA Trump agenda that the far left does.
No, I don't disagree. I've been screaming and bashing my balding head off the desk forever about Republican participation in primaries in these red states. Natalie, it's embarrassing. Once every 4 years, everyone throws on a MAGA hat and they get excited and it's rally time and they get involved. But then Republican primary season in my state of Texas comes up and Republicans are nowhere to be found. And we have that human barnacle John Cornyn in the Senate now forever. We've got to freaking change it. I don't know how we change it. I feel like maybe it is changing, but I'm frustrated. I'll be honest.
No, it's all about seizing the institutions. And I think though we can celebrate the overwhelming victory that President Trump had, if we don't have the ability to effectuate it or actually implement, you know, what's this all for? And I think that while, like I said, we can celebrate our victory, that same spirit that allowed us to win in 2024, really working hard on election integrity, working hard on candidate and quality candidate selection, I think we need to not let our foot off the gas and continue only to accelerate more on that front. And I think too, you know, these senators who are up for reelection, since right now we're what, essentially the maximum amount of time period that you could be away from primary season from these forthcoming elections, we need to not have short-term memory loss, and we need to actually drill down and primary these people.
No doubt about it. I will be participating wholeheartedly, as I know
maybe you
will. Okay. Chuck Schumer is ramming judges through as fast as he possibly can. What's going on here?
Yeah, so I think it's important to sort of contextualize this effort to ram federal judges through. I think they're up to over 200. The sort of left-wing resistance this time, I think, can be compartmentalized into three distinct categories. One is the judges, that they're working overtime, you know, into the wee hours of the night, as the Washington Post says, democracy dies in darkness. The second is the sort of states' rights argument, right? All the Democratic governors working to undermine the Trump agenda. And then the third silo is going to be the left-wing NGO. That's your ACLU, SPLC, activist-y, all the way to the left of, you know, the Communist Party USA. But right now, since right President Trump hasn't been sworn in, they're in sort of their first phase of resistance, which is essentially the idea of, quote, Trump-proofing the government. And one of the levers of power that they're really intent on weaponizing as we speak to do that is by ramming through as many judges as possible. And there's been some controversy over some Republican senators, particularly Mike Braun of Indiana, even Ted Cruz in some cases, not being present for votes. Now, if they were there, it wouldn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't have been confirmed, but it would have at least forced Kamala Harris to cut her Hawaii vacation short. But it's really important in this, you know, what is it, 59, 58 days that we have until President Trump is sworn in. Democrats and their establishment Republican counterparts are doing every single thing that they can. They will not let 1 second go to waste to Trump-proof this country and block the America First agenda.
Speaking of Trump-proofing, we're firing long-range, well, I'm sorry, the Ukrainians are firing long-range missiles into Russia. We're now tossing anti-personnel mines on the ground. It looks like they're really trying to Trump-proof this financial boondoggle, the slaughterhouse going on in Ukraine. It's pretty ugly.
I mean, this, I'm sorry, it's treason. There's no other way to couch it. Yeah. Having the Biden regime put Zelensky in the best possible negotiation place to be right when he comes to the table with Putin and Trump, that's not helping America. That's helping Ukraine, and that's the definition of being a traitor to your country. I think it's also worth noting that sort of secretly overnight, they've been working behind the scenes to forgive half of a $9 billion loan to Ukraine for, of course, nebulous, you know, foreign aid and military equipment, whatever that may mean. So that's about $4.7 billion. But it shows you, right, they're not displaying this new policy sort of reversal with wide open arms to the American people. They're doing it secretly. They're forced to put out a statement because certain reporters have sort of, you know, leaked it. But they know this is such an unpopular issue. But I think, too, just last point on this, it's quite interesting. I'm sure your audience is familiar with the Transition Integrity Project. It was the sort of far left Soros funded election interference group that tried to prevent Trump from winning in 2020. And one of the things that they said President Trump was going to do in his transition period to just sort of muddy the water and make it very difficult for a potential president-elect Joe Biden was to, quote, spark a foreign adventure or have a sort of wag the dog type affair. So obviously the left deals in projection, but I think it just sort of shows you how they're really trying to muddy the water and hand President Trump the most complicated geopolitical situation that they quite possibly could.
What do you think of these nominees so far, Natalie, or these potential cabinet picks? I love most of them. Look, you can have or leave the losers like Kristi Noem, in my opinion. But for the most part, I love them. I've been very, very impressed. Hegseth has me doing backflips if I wouldn't throw my back out.
Yeah, right. Hegseth, he's not qualified because he's what, not on the board of Raytheon or Boeing? I mean, this idea that you have to appoint trusted experts. Yeah, where have those experts gotten us the last, many decades in terms of foreign policy? I think overall, you know, the obviously top line ones, the Gabbards, the Hegseth nominations are wonderful. I will say I think the Rubio nomination is something that I am particularly concerned about, just because I think in the kind of global censorship wars, that's something that obviously you follow quite closely, we follow quite closely on War Room. So much of that, whether it's USAID or other sort of NGO type activity, runs straight through State Department. So you need someone who's willing to stare down globalists in the face and, of course, the, shall we say, enemy within domestically, and tell them that, no, you're not going to censor the American people, but what you're talking about is dismantling a multi-billion dollar industry and essentially censorship industrial complex. And I just don't think Rubio has the spine to stick up to that behemoth that is probably the deep state epitomized.
Yeah, I kind of share your concerns on that one. I'm going to table those for now, but I've been vocally against that one too. What the heck are you going to do? Nobody bats a thousand. Let's talk about China and Donald Trump. This relationship has been contentious, to put it mildly. China, of course, would prefer Democrats remain in power forever because they frankly work for China now. What changes now, Natalie?
Well, look, President Trump attacked the China issue with a level of nuance that I think most people don't appreciate, particularly his ability to sanction foreign influence groups who are busy, as we speak, paying off basically everyone in Washington, D.C. and New York to try to effectuate pro-China policies on every level of federal, state, and local government. So I think that area in particular was something that the Trump administration was particularly adept on in their National Security Council desk, tasked with running China affairs, was, I think, particularly ahead on that issue and over the target. But more broadly, too, I think it's quite funny, right, when they point out certain, for example, Tulsi Gabbard, they say, oh, well, you know, she's compromised by Russia because she once maybe put out a tweet that didn't peddle the military-industrial complex's line on Russia. Well, Democrats, if you want to play the game of people being compromised by foreign countries, I would suggest you look into someone named Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, because he'd be disqualified from running for president if that's the standard you want to levy against any presidential nominee or candidate.
Certainly would. Natalie, you are the best. Come back anytime. Thank you. All right. We have so much more. And I have so much more for you. I have your Christmas shopping already done. Did you know that? Cell phone. Someone in your life wants a new cell phone. And you don't have to worry about having to break the bank because Pure Talk is here. You don't need Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. That person in your life, husband, wife, son, daughter, why don't you switch them to Pure Talk? Save a fortune, brand new iPhone, brand new Android, whatever you want. Pure Talk has everything. They're also on the same 5G network, so you're not going to sacrifice coverage. You're not going to sacrifice service. When you get a hold of people at Pure Talk, you will speak to an American who speaks English, because this company loves this country, led by a Vietnam veteran. Switch to Pure Talk. Save a fortune. Be patriotic. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's crazy how different the two parties are and how, frankly, awful Democrats are. And this is for me, I criticize Republicans all the time, but as soon as you get a Democrat president, you just know energy is going to get more expensive. They get into office and they attack the energy sector. Remember the Keystone Pipeline? Yeah, that was good to go. And then Biden got elected and poof, it was just gone immediately. And of course, they're reporting now that Trump is going to bring it back, may bring it back. We'll see what else Trump may do. Joining me now, Mark Morano, executive editor of ClimateDepot.com. Mark, are we getting Keystone back? What else are we getting back? Are we getting the band back together here?
We are. I mean, this is going to be a complete yin-yang to what we just went through with Joe Biden, which was a yin-yang from what we went through with Trump, which was a yin-yang from what we went through with Obama. I think the key message here is President Trump has to get us out of the yin-yang, I guess you'd call it the whiplash that we literally deal with every 4 years. And there's some key things he can do. Yes, he can reverse all of Biden's executive orders. Yes, he can start allowing permitting and drilling and federal lands and our waters. But here's the key that he needs to do, and this has to be day one. He needs to submit to the United States Senate the Earth Summit Treaty that was the underlying basis for this entire United Nations Climate Conference. And submit the UN Paris Agreement 2016 to the Senate for verification. And this would no doubt go down in flames in the Senate, force them. And then that would get us out of the 1992 Rio Earth Summit Treaty, which George H.W. Bush, a Republican, got us into. This is what needs to be done. Otherwise, then that would do is make it incredibly difficult for the next president to embrace this UN net zero agenda. And of course, all the other tentacles that come for that. Maybe I didn't explain it well enough, but the bottom line is we have to get out of the UN climate process, which we are in by treaty going back to 1992, George Bush. And we need to get out of that, and we need to get out of it so the next president can't just do some executive orders and reversals and we're back in. That's where Donald Trump failed last time. That, I think, is one of the key things he can do for American energy.
Okay, so this sounds like something that's possible for him to do. Have you heard any sniffs out of Trump camp that it's something he's interested in doing?
Yes, I think he is. Now, can you remember, just let's go back, 2017-18, he had Rick Perry, energy secretary, who was like, oh, we need to stay in the UN Paris Agreement. He had Rex Tillerson as Department of State. Oh, we need to stay in the UN Paris. And Donald Trump himself back, if you recall, well, we're going to renegotiate, get a better deal. You know, no, there's no better deal. This Donald Trump 2.0 gets it. He's not playing that game. And I think he's ready to do this. This is what all of the climate skeptics, this is what all of his advisors are urging him. This is going nuclear on this entire, since 1992, United Nations Summit Climate Treaty process. This would kill it in the United States. We submitted as a treaty to the United States. Remember, Obama didn't want to submit the UN Paris Agreement as a treaty. Anyway, that's a key thing that he can do in addition to just a whole host of reversals of everything Biden did and Obama did. And I think what we're going to have here, it's going to take a few years. I think you're going to see an almost instantaneous effect on prices, because energy is run on futures market, particularly things like the oil and the gas markets. If there's a feeling that things are opening up, there's going to be excitement and there's going to be a pressure to lower prices almost immediately. So just that idea of the attitude and the agenda of Donald Trump is going to have a huge immediate impact.
Yeah, momentum is a powerful thing. Okay, Mark, can Donald Trump begin getting us back into refining? You and I have had this talk before about how we don't refine very much. We've eliminated so much of our refining capacity. It's insane to me that we will dig up oil here and then ship it somewhere else to get refined and then ship it back. Yes. It's just madness to me. Can we reverse that?
It's hard to reverse because so much of that is regulated. So much of that is like everything else in America. Everything we outsource. But this doesn't make sense that we outsource. This is a national security issue. And we produce the energy domestically. Let's refine it domestically. He can start a long process toward that. And it all comes down to deregulation and stopping this climate agenda and bringing out obvious things. Like if we don't do it here, we're doing it in places that don't have our high standards. We're doing it around the world. And we need to get back to that. That is one of the key things we need to do. And I think when Trump is sworn in on that first day, there's just going to be such a sea change of reversals. And I think there's also a sense, this is a key point when it comes to all of this. This is not Donald Trump 2016, meaning we were just on the cusp of dealing with the UN Paris Agreement, net zero. The whole world was all in. Everyone was excited. Republicans were cowering in fear. You know, I don't want to be against the environment, net zero. We're all for net zero. We've had 8 years since then. And we see the disaster. We see the European governments bailing out. The German coalition just collapsed. In England, they had a huge rebellion. The EU elections last summer were a huge rebuke. They suspended the Green New Deal in Europe, all throughout Europe, through the EU. Now we have Donald Trump coming in. You have Argentina at this COP29 summit I just got back from, literally pulling their 170-member delegation. You had the French foreign environmental minister not show up because they were slighted. No major Western leader other than the UK prime minister showed up at this summit. You have one of the Pacific nations said they're not coming because this is just nothing happens at these conferences. They're greenwashing and they're a waste of their time. So Donald Trump can help push what I call a Clexit, climate exit from this UN process, similar to the way a Brexit was the England's exit, Britain's exit from the EU.
Mark, how's Azerbaijan? I don't know if I said that right. I don't even know where it is. It sounds like it's in South America or something, but it doesn't sound right.
Well, it's in Western Asia, bordering Russia. It's next to Russia and Iran. I was actually tempted when I was there for a week to cross over the border into Iran and see how far they were getting on those nuclear weapons. I wisely chose not to, but I don't know that I could have got in and out. But Azerbaijan, unlike Dubai last year, which I was just sort of in love with, I just couldn't believe how beautiful a city it was. And Azerbaijan, and I was in Baku, the capital, they literally are an example of an oligarch of where the United States is actually headed if we were going on the Great Reset. You had dire poverty, pollution, trash, crumbling infrastructure, and then juxtaposed against Rolls-Royce dealerships, Armani, Gucci stores, block and block, city block after city block. There's very wealthy petrostate oil money, and then the rest of it. There's no thriving middle class in Azerbaijan. Interestingly enough, their leader is an authoritarian whose father was the Soviet puppet during the Soviet control of Azerbaijan. So it was an interesting country to hold the UN climate summit in, because that's basically the UN green vision. You're going to have a few people at the top doing what they want in private jets and eating all the meat they want, and everyone else is going to be in the crumbling infrastructure and the energy rationing. The conference is still ongoing. It's just about to end. I think it ends tomorrow. I got back a few days ago. All I can say is Donald Trump cast a shadow over the entire conference. There was depression, remote world leaders. Al Gore was finally forced to show up unannounced. He was not scheduled. I didn't see him anywhere on the schedule. And he shows up and starts, ranting about how climate scientists have been right about everything. The Taliban showed up at this conference for the first time ever. They're now recognized as leaders of Afghanistan, and they showed up, which means Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did not need to be there, because the Taliban literally repeat the Biden message there at this UN. In fact, they've rehabilitated their image. Washington Post, Newsweek, New York Times, Washington Post had a front page story about how the Taliban is fighting climate change, and now they're becoming accepted again in polite society in the international community because they're rehabilitated their image with climate change.
Yeah. Fighting climate change with one abused little girl at a time. What a wonderful regime that is. Mark, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. Gosh. All right. Let's do some culture war stuff, shall we? Speaking of culture war stuff, babies. We have to save them. You know the Preborn's network of clinics? They have these clinics. They set them up in the highest abortion areas of the country. You know that they save 200 lives every day. When you support Preborn, if you ever have, or you will right now, you are saving a life. It's not like other places you give. You save a life. That baby, it's about to die. But mom, if she gets an ultrasound, if she can hear the heartbeat, she will choose life. She does almost every time. That's what Preborn does. They give free ultrasounds. $28 is what that ultrasound costs. Whatever you give to Preborn, it's tax deductible. $28 million for all I care. Preborn.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word. One that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's because you can then misuse words like oppression. There has been no oppression for the white man in this country. You tell me which white men were dragged out of their homes. You tell me which one of them got dragged all the way across an ocean and told that you are going to go and work. We are going to steal your wives. We are going to rape your wives. That didn't happen. That is oppression. We didn't ask to be here. We're not the same migrants that y'all constantly come up against. We didn't run away from home. We were stolen. So yeah, we are going to sit here and be offended when you want to sit here and act like, and don't let it escape you that it is white men on this side of the aisle telling us, people of color on this side of the aisle, that y'all are the ones being oppressed, that y'all are the ones that are being harmed.
Sorry, I can't. We have just so many weapons-grade morons in our government. It's amazing. It's amazing the country is still standing. Joining me now, Alex Clark, host of Culture Apothecary with Alex Clark. I'm going to ask her about that in a second. And Morgan McMichael, Turning Point USA contributor. Okay, Alex, first of all, what's apothecary? It sounds like some kind of hippie stuff. I don't understand. What is it?
Yeah, well, it kind of is. An apothecary was the original place in your community that you would go for natural remedies. And so my podcast, we are all about healing a sick culture. So every guest has their own unique remedy to do that, you know, for physical health, spiritual health, or mental health. So yeah, it's the original place you would go before pharmacies and hospitals and big pharma. You would go to an apothecary. So that's kind of the story there.
See, I knew it was hippie stuff with crystals and stuff like that. I've heard of that stuff. Okay, Morgan, it doesn't appear that these dirty commies on the left have learned any lessons at all from the election. We don't want to be divided by race. This stuff does not work anymore. The whole sexist, misogynist, you hate black people thing, it doesn't work anymore, but they don't learn.
They never learn. I mean, they have been the ones that have called us racist, xenophobic, homophobic, transphobic, you name it. We've been called every name in the book. But this clip, I just think, is hilarious because while she's touting about oppression, she's wearing thousands of dollars worth of jewelry. Her earrings are Chanel. And I'd really want to ask her a question is, how have you been oppressed in the United States of America? Because I really don't think there is any kind of quote unquote systemic racism that actually is impacting her, especially when America is the land of the free, home of the brave, a country with opportunity that she would not be afforded in any other country.
Alex, speaking of your show, your podcast, let's talk about the election and the echo chamber Democrats live in. Kamala Harris famously was controlled to the max. She wouldn't do interviews. When she would, it was only a limited amount of time. You have to edit out this. She won't do Joe Rogan. How much do Democrats suffer from just being the urban elite party now? There's just a sea of red across the middle of the country when you look at the map, and a couple of big blue pockets on the coast. That's where they are now, and that's the only place they are.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to bring up that Kamala Harris is incapable of having an unfiltered, unedited conversation for hours and not sounding like a complete imbecile, which is true. That's why she only did one podcast interview, which was Call Her Daddy, a liberal female audience podcast. But I think that that was a terrible strategy because it wasn't going to win her any new voters. And then you, meanwhile, had young men who have been trending for Trump in massive waves for the past year. There was that recent study that talked to boys graduating high school, and they were overwhelmingly leaning conservative. So she was ignoring young men, refusing to go on more mass appeal podcasts because she's too afraid. And yes, the Democrats all live in an echo chamber. They just keep having hope and assuming and thinking like, oh, everybody agrees with us, when it's clearly not the case. She could have gone on different shows like Theo Von or Joe Rogan, which really could have attempted to show her in a different light to more of a mass appeal audience that had people both from the left and the right, but she refused to do it. And then the second biggest fail of the Kamala Harris campaign, not only the echo chamber podcast and refusing to talk to other people unfiltered, showing her personality, it was also refusing to link arms with RFK Jr.
Yeah, it didn't do her any favors at all. Morgan, maybe she doesn't have a personality. You know, Alex didn't, she wasn't wrong with anything she just said. She never opened up. She wouldn't go just be raw on a podcast for 3 hours. I shouldn't use words like that when talking about Harris, but she just wouldn't just open up. But she doesn't have a personality to open up. Maybe her personality is friggin' horrific, and they did the only thing they could do with her.
I mean, she is just continuing the chain of command when it comes to control and being a puppet for the deep state and the DNC. So I'm really not surprised that she didn't go on all these podcasts. And I think it was, like Alex said, her number one failing point with this election, because she could have easily actually talked about Gen Z issues, talked about issues concerning women, also the MAHA movement, which Alex has been a pioneer in the podcast industry when it comes to that. And I think it lost her so many points. I mean, you can look across the board, every single county, she didn't do better than Biden in any county looking comparing to 2020. And even Trump did better when it came to women. And I just think that she really failed when it came to talking to her voting base about things that matter, because she campaigned entirely off of abortion and it ended up failing.
Alex, you brought up RFK and MAHA, and of course we learned about your hippie podcast, trying to get people healthier, which actually I joke, but I do support these things. I like that the right has gone this route, talking more about health, talking more about the crap in our food, talking more about working out. It's such a weird thing to hear either one of the political parties address these issues, and honestly, I'm a little surprised it was the Republicans.
Well, you shouldn't be, because of the pandemic. So during the pandemic, you had the majority of Republican parents were voting in favor, totally vaccinate my children, I'm all in favor. When we mandated the COVID vaccine, you saw those numbers plummet. It was nearly 100%, and then it went all the way down into the 20% of people that would say, yes, I believe vaccine's safe and effective. It was all because of the lies and the manipulation and the censorship going on from Big Pharma during those 4 years, 2020 to 2024. So that's a huge indicator that we were in for some serious change. But you're right. Historically, it was more the liberal, crunchy, granola people that cared about things like organic food and GMOs. And so that was why it was such a big deal and such a huge clincher on the Trump campaign when Bobby Kennedy came out on stage in Arizona, endorsed Donald Trump, said he was going to be working with him and voting for him, and that President Trump promised him a spot in the administration taking care of health for the American people. And that gained, I believe, gained Trump so many more female voters than anyone was expecting because of what Morgan brought up. The left was totally banking on abortion. But actually, it turns out more moms care about being able to feed their children and feed them healthy food as opposed to just killing them.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick, Morgan. The female vote, obviously, young single women percentage-wise voted for Democrats, but they did not clean sweep women, as Alex just pointed out, the way they were expecting to. They obviously thought they were going to get every woman in the country, but that didn't happen. I know Republicans have a long way to go, but are women shifting right at all, or have we just completely lost the kooky nutters?
I think women will eventually start shifting more to the right and being more conservative as time goes on, and they continue to see the lies that the feminist movement has been selling them for years, even encapsulated with the MAHA movement. Look how birth control has impacted women, and I've seen hundreds of thousands of women starting to ditch their birth control over the past couple of years. And even looking at the polling, under the age of 30, women under the age of 30, 40% voted for Trump, which is a lot more than I think the Democrats expected them to. And just like Alex said, when you are looking at feeding your kids, wanting to have children in the future, wanting a safe economic future so that you can raise your kids, buy a house, and actually looking at issues that are concerning the middle and lower class Americans, it's a no-brainer that a candidate like Kamala Harris isn't actually working in your favor. And it's the more that we dive into the lies of how the feminist movement has really trapped women, I think they're going to start waking up and voting more conservative in the future.
And can I just piggyback something on what she just said?
Sure.
President Trump gained 15 points with women. That is huge. The GOP has an opportunity here. We just gained millions of new female voters. Again, I believe largely because of the MAHA movement. If we keep courting them and we, you know, it's like we just had a great successful first date. That was the election. We had a great first date with all of these new female voters. If the GOP continues to keep promises and Trump keeps promises and all this health stuff and we keep moving forward and we treat them right and we make them feel welcome, we have the potential to keep them then for 2028 and going on forward from that. So I think the new Republican Party focusing on a lot of these very nonpartisan issues in the health space, we are looking at a very, very favorable future with female voters.
Yeah, I think so. And as they reject feminism, because women don't want to be ugly. So anyway, Morgan, Alex, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We have Light in the Mood. Next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and it is enjoyable after the other party takes a beating electorally, watching them try to figure out why, and watching them fight with each other about, it's your fault, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be saying that, and look, this happens to us too, when we have these huge losses. Everyone starts throwing mud at each other. You did this, and the other, you did this. And so now, because we had this big election win, we get to sit back and bask in the glow of Democrats going on television throwing poop at each other.
Look, I debated Professor Lichtman before I told him his theories about the keys were absurd. I was right. He was wrong. I said he'd lose his keys.
No, you were not right, and I was not wrong. And that's a cheap shot, and I won't stand for it.
Well, who won, brother?
You should not be taking cheap shots at me.
Who won?
You want to make your point,
make your point. You live in a total world of denial.
I read your own followers' comments, and they all trashed you, every one of them, and supported me.
Yeah,
right, with your personal attacks.
Yeah, come find out again.
Make whatever point you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't make it personal.
You don't know anything.
Say whatever you want, but I'm not going to stand
for personal
attacks.
Okay, but brother, you got it wrong.
Say
whatever
you want.
You were preposterously and stupidly wrong. So, okay, all right. Can I just finish a goddamn thought?
Don't call me stupid.
Hey,
Alan,
right now.
Hey, Alan, you deserve a tall glass of shut-up juice, so can you just shut up for a second?
I will not sit here and stand for personal attacks, for blasphemy against me. You don't need to do that. You don't boost
blasphemy your ego against you?
What
the hell are you? Are you
like
Jesus
that?
Christ, you
points.
Loser?
I'm going to pull that out the next time the wife is mad at me about something. And then she's yelling. I'm going to say, that's blasphemy. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.